sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Israeli Consul General David Siegel. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Today is a special day on the Two Jewish Radio Show. I mean, of course, every Two Jewish Radio Show is special, but some are even more special than others. This morning marks the 550th edition of Two Jewish, which makes our upcoming 10th anniversary celebration, starring comedian Robert Klein. It'll be a live radio broadcast before a very live and large audience at the Fox Theaters Saturday night, March 2nd. Even more exciting, we have now done 550 shows, all but the first 6 months or so of which you can download on iTunes or stream from our TwoJewishRadio.com website. And while in the grand sweep of 3,800 years of Jewish history, 10 years may not seem like much, it's still somewhat amazing to me. I've now been covering everyone and everything in the Jewish world for a decade and have interviewed well over 400 different guests. Actually, closer to 500, even though a few of our favorites have been on two, three, or even four times. That also means I've told 550 old Jewish jokes of the week, although I suspect more than a few have been repeated over the years. But, of course, how could you tell since they were already old Jewish jokes? I have given 550 weekly Torah talks, delivered the news of Jews around the world each week for 10 years. We have played perhaps 1,500 different Jewish musical selections and done God knows how many theoretically humorous shticks. And I've addressed many controversial and challenging issues too, from war to terrorism to gun violence to anti-Semitism to corruption, including a goodly number of intra-Jewish contests and controversies. The goal of this Two Jewish Show has always been both to inform and entertain, as well as to open up the fabulous richness of the Jewish world to both non-Jews and Jews in ways that aren't available anywhere else. I guess I feel kind of proud that we've managed to do this for so long and at this level. And while Two Jewish is a variety show with lots of different moving parts, our featured guest is always about a third of the airtime each week, so our guests matter a great deal. We've been blessed to have had many of the great figures of the Jewish world over the past 10 years, and the most interesting and innovative Jewish leaders, authors, poets, musicians, rabbis, cantors, businessmen, entrepreneurs, environmentalists, chefs, actors, celebrities, comedians, activists, athletes, academics, archaeologists, philanthropists, and politicians. And they are all different and all pretty fascinating. I was thinking about how different kinds of guests interview in very different ways. Every category of guests has a different style, to be honest. Politicians are typically sharp, succinct, on message, smart, and good with sound bites. Academics rarely can contain their answers to the 3 or 4 minutes that make for the liveliest of interviews. They're so used to lecturing for 50 minutes at a time that any answer under 8 minutes feels inadequately complex. Authors, who work in solitary isolation much of the time, tend to be the happiest subjects since they're grateful for the opportunity to tell their story or explore their process. Comedians are usually more interested in talking about serious subjects than cracking jokes, and musicians range from the amazingly warmly reflective to the deeply introspective, and you never know until you're talking with them what you will get. Chefs are surprisingly engaging. Actors are hard to get to, and the interviews range from wonderful to the banal. And the same, more or less, can be said of athletes. And rabbis? Well, we're usually pretty good at being both accessible and talkative, two important qualities in every Two Jewish interview. Without spending way too much time on this theme, I have to confess that it's a pleasure and often a privilege to have the opportunity each week to talk to someone who makes a difference in the Jewish world, and usually in the larger world as well. And I'm so pleased that you choose to share this experience with me here on Too Jewish this morning, and I hope every week. The Purely Fun Festival of Purim is coming up in 2 weeks. It actually is Saturday night, February 23rd, and Sunday, February 24th. But we'll be celebrating at my own Temple Emmanuel with a fantastic Purim parody extravaganza called Les Megillab, a takeoff on Les Mizrab, on Sunday, February 17th at 10 a.m. But you know, there's another holiday coming up this week, and we're going to play in with my friend Rabbi Joe Black's great little tune called Valentine's Day is Not a Jewish Holiday.
Valentine's Day is not a Jewish holiday. That's why I didn't buy you flowers. I was thinking just of you. I know you're proud to be a Jew. It's a most confusing 24 hours. No, I can't be what I ain't. And a day named for a saint doesn't seem to be a kosher celebration. Oh, but when Purim comes, we'll nash on special heart-shaped Hamantaschen and drink Mulligan David wine for our libation. It's a Hallmark holiday, that is all that I can say. I don't know why you think it's so essential. Besides, at 80 bucks a pop, a dozen roses ain't so high. What's the point of getting oh so sentimental? No, I didn't buy Godivas, 'cause the increase in your dress sizes from eating chocolate makes you weep and makes you wail. So open up the bedroom door, don't make me sleep here on the floor. I'll buy perfume for you next week when it's on sale.
That was Rabbi Joe Black singing about Valentine's Day this week. But more importantly, Purim's coming up soon, so get to baking those Hamantaschen, including heart-shaped ones. In preparation for our 10th anniversary celebration of this Two Jewish Radio Show, Saturday night, March 2nd at the Fox Theater, get your tickets now at foxtheatertucson.org, we are previewing our star comedian that night, Robert Klein. This is a great take from some of his political humor.
I was part of two of the most successful campaigns of the 20th century, Montel and Dukakis. I told Dukakis, go to an army base and put on a schmucky-looking helmet with earlaps that'll make you look like a Greek Alfred E. Newman. And the Republicans went, schmuck alert, schmuck alert, whoop, whoop, whoop. Holy smokes, he almost lost Massachusetts that day. He's a decent guy, Dukakis, but they kept on over-ethnicizing his name. You know, there's Mississippi politicians on CNN. Well, I'm voting for Mr. Bush. Now, Governor Dukakis, you know, in Greece, it's like Smith, but Dukakis, they did that with Obama, too. Well, I'm voting for Senator McCain. Now, Barack Hussein Obama is certainly... You know, we just were at war with this guy, okay? Hussein Obama is...
Comedian Robert Klein will be here for the 10th anniversary celebration of Too Jewish at the Fox Theater, March 2nd. Come and join us. When we come back on Too Jewish, Israeli Consul General David Siegel will help us explore the challenge Iran creates for Israel and explain just how dynamic a place Israel is today in so many different ways. Find out in a few moments on Too Jewish.
There's nothing like a live radio show to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Two Jewish Radio Show, presented by the Jim Click Automotive Team at the Fox on March 2nd.
Better than Prairie Home Companion, it's Deli Home Companion. Join me and my great guests, including legendary comedian Robert Klein, for a live radio variety show March 2nd at the Fox to benefit Jewish Family and Children's Services, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and Temple Emmanuel.
Tickets at the Fox box office and foxtucsontheater.org.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish David Siegel. He's the Consul General of Israel in Los Angeles. He began that post in August of 2011. He's a senior representative of the State of Israel in the southwestern United States. He formerly served as the Chief of Staff to Israel's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs and has served the Israeli government in a variety of ambassadorial service, I think is probably the right term, and other functions during the years in which he worked in Washington. He participated in the Y River Peace Summit, the Israeli-Syria negotiations of 99, the Camp David Middle East Peace Summit in 2000, the 2007 Annapolis Conference. He's kind of been everywhere. Welcome and good morning.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
So explain what a consul general does. Not everybody understands the distinction between an ambassador and a consul general.
Well, we have one ambassador in the United States. We actually have two. We have one to the United Nations, one in Washington that covers the United States.
And New York to the UN, of course.
Right. And we have nine regional offices, nine consulates across the United States, and we service our Israeli populations. We work with the Jewish population and Christian populations. We do outreach to Latino community, ethnic communities in America, the business community, the academic community. We're based in Los Angeles, and we cover seven states from Colorado out to Hawaii. As we say, someone has to do it. I haven't been out there yet.
It may be a myth. Honolulu is really
it may be a myth, but we'll see. Hopefully around Passover we'll be in Hawaii. And we meet with local with members of Congress.
We always say that next year in Honolulu, in my Seder.
Next year in Honolulu. And then we ask, why did Moses take us there? And the answer is that we couldn't really test our moral ethic values in
it's too easy.
In Maui.
It's too easy.
In any event, we do work very intensively in seven states, and our job is to bring Israel closer to the communities here and to find joint projects and have our businesses get to know each other. We just came from Raytheon, where they have a tremendous, I don't know if people are aware of it.
Very close relationship with Israel.
Tremendous relationship with Israel, and they're very involved in one of our major priorities, which is the David Sling system, which is the next system after Iron Dome.
To stop incoming missiles, it's the next generation.
Yes, but it's something on a completely different scale, and that is a very significant relationship that we have with Arizona, and specifically with Tucson. We're going to ASU tomorrow, where we're focused on our academic exchanges and scientific exchanges and R&D exchanges with that community. So it's really endless, and the sky's the limit, and it's part of the U.S.-Israel relationship that is really larger than people usually appreciate.
You know, I have to tell you, the sky is an interesting analogy, because I've been at spring training games where suddenly they bring in a bunch of Israeli pilots who are training at Davis-Monthan, or they're training. Obviously, there's a close relationship that goes beyond the civilian, and then people think about that military relationship as one of hardware, but it's also personnel, isn't it? In terms of people coming here and training and experiencing each other's cultures.
Look, Israel plays a very unique role, certainly in the Middle East, and the U.S.-Israel relationship is very unique, and some say that it's probably the most significant relationship, certainly that Israel has with any other country, but also that America has with any other country. Israel's intelligence assets are hugely beneficial to the United States, and we hear it both from The Intel committees in Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, the administration, both sides of the Potomac, as we call it, the intelligence relationship is vast. So it's people to people. It's training together. It's working on missile defense. Means that it's a whole world out there of hardware, of software, of technology, which relates to missiles, but could also relate to high tech industries. So it's enormous. So. It's a big relationship.
We will talk much more with Consul General David Siegel when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime by directing your tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. State of Arizona allows taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations who provide scholarships for kids in kindergarten through 12th grade to go to qualified private schools. JETCO provides a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel's Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Join over 750 supporters last year who gave money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income tax. New this year, there's an additional tax credit, the switcher credit. It increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,003 for single filers and $2,006 for married couples filing jointly. When we fight every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to foster a Jewish identity for our community's kids. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive financial aid in order to get a Jewish education. Call 647-8442, again, 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Give the gift of education. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows by streaming them on the website, twojewishradio.com, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. A weird story this week from Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, where the Jewish community has now shrunk from 22,000 Jews when he took office to just over 10,000 today, partly because of his own personal anti-Semitism. A dossier attributed to SEBIN, the Venezuelan Secret Service, released last week shows that Chavez's Venezuelan government considers the country's Jews to be a fifth column that is spying on them, and therefore they spy on the Jews systematically. Yeesh. As part of the security apparatus of the regime, many Venezuelans are under surveillance, says Sammy Eppel, a Jewish columnist to the Venezuelan daily El Nacional, an opposition newspaper. The Jewish community is obviously perceived as some sort of threat that warrants those actions. Venezuelan state security officers raided Jewish institutions twice in 2004 and 2007, and Chavez has accused Israel of financing the counter-revolution in Venezuela. In 2009, a Caracas synagogue was ransacked by an angry mob, including several police officers, following the 2009 Israeli military campaign in Gaza.
Combined with the failing economy in Venezuela and a surge in violent crime, the hostility from the Chavez government has led to a Jewish exodus to the U.S., Israel, and other Latin American countries. Fewer than half of the 1999 Jewish population of 22,000 remains. One of the ridiculous allegations that are made by the Secret Service is that the Espacio Ana Frank, a human rights organization, is somehow representing the Mossad. Paulina Gamas, one of the directors of Espacio Ana Frank and a former member of the Venezuelan parliament, said the allegations are ridiculous. They accuse us of belonging to the Mossad and the Israeli Secret Services only because we are an institution that promotes respect of different religions and cultures, and we have a Jewish component, although we are all Venezuelans, she said. Venezuelan Jews said they were not surprised that SEBIN, Chavez's Secret Service, has been spying on them. The report is part of a massive cache of material obtained by Analysis 24, an Argentinian media outlet opposed to Chavez. It includes intelligence reports and clandestinely recorded photos. Nicholas Solano, Analysis 24's editor, says that the website received the material from a former high-ranking SEBIN source. Rabbi Pinchas Brenner is among those Venezuelan Jews who left. A vocal critic of Chavez, Brenner is identified in the SEBIN documents as the Mossad's chief spymaster in Venezuela. One chart places him at the head of an intricate web of informants and cover-up operations that report directly to the Israeli intelligence service and the American and Canadian embassies in Caracas. I'm not a Mossad agent, and I never was one, Rabbi Brenner says. Maybe I'll be one in the future. Born in Poland, Brenner was raised in Peru and led the congregation in Caracas for 44 years before retiring to Florida in 2011. He said he was labeled a spymaster because he was among Venezuela's more visible Jews. Venezuela is the most tolerant society I know, Brenner said. There's almost zero anti-Semitism, but the government has been cultivating it. Chavez is currently battling cancer, but apparently it hasn't prevented him from continuing to try to import anti-Semitism to Venezuela. Sadly, this just goes to show that even where there is no history or possible advantage to pushing anti-Semitism, some sick people will work to create it. In this case, Hugo Chavez. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center here in Tucson. Boker Tov, Guy.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So, almost as soon as Yair Lapid got this shocking huge vote in the elections to the Knesset and has a bigger block than anybody thought, the rising star, almost immediately the story started to come out. Is it going to be another failed third party? Is he going to be a shooting star that comes right back to earth? What does one make of all this in America?
You know, those are big questions, and I need to be honest and say that I don't really have the answers for them. Central parties have been created in Israel for every election for the last at least decade. There was Habayit HaShlishi, there was the Central Movement, there were many, Kadima.
Well, and you know, Tommy Lapid, Yair Lapid's father, also had a big secular movement that was going to be a centrist party that had one big election and then collapsed.
Right, and part of the reasons that those central parties are being created and then collapse is that on one hand, there is a real need from the public for a central, secular mainly, party that will represent the middle class, the secular Zionist elements of society. On the other hand, those parties lack the historical heritage. They lack this glue that keeps parties together because they are created ad hoc. They gather people that they think that might get public voters to come and you know, and give their vote. Fancy names, no names, people that had some part here or there. But when things are getting tough, often those people don't have enough in common to keep them together. And that might be the main challenge for Yair Lapid as time goes by, to see if he is able to really get this party to become a party and not just a one-man show with other people that join in and now each of them wants to push to a different direction, different agendas. That's the big challenge. Can you build this call it organizational culture that will become a party?
You know, don't sometimes in putting together these lists, people join for self-interest too. If they think that they're going to get a better position or have an opportunity to have a ministry or something in the government.
That is sometimes the case. That was one of the main claims that critics of Tzipi Livni's party have pointed on her party, because her party did appear to be a combination of people that were really, you know, one that left this party, another left another party.
Big names, but not really any coherence.
Exactly. Big names that all kind of were seeking a second chance after not succeeding too much in where they were. So that was one of the claims that were heard. And she will face the same challenge that Yair Lapid will face, maybe even more, because the names that she have are bigger, stronger, and more experienced, which will mean that it will be more challenging for her to hold the wheel and drive the car. But Yair Lapid will also face that challenge. He have some big names, people that were CEOs of big companies, people that were very famous lawyers in his party. So he will have, you know, interesting time.
Very interesting. It's never dull in Israeli politics. It doesn't always make sense, but it's never dull. Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
One of the really interesting ideas of contemporary period is that Israel is now where everything is happening in Jewish life for the first time in so very long, and the diaspora is fading or disappearing. But historically speaking, Chutz La'aretz, the diaspora, has often been a source of great richness in Jewish life. Is that still true? Let's play with this idea a little bit.
Well, we have to cover a very long period, so we may not all get it all done today.
All right, but that's okay with me.
I mean, first of all, just the starting premise. Yes, since 1948, there's been a state of Israel, and it has grown in many ways, not only in terms of population, but in terms of wealth, prosperity, creativity. It has attracted Jews really from Arba Kanfot Haaretz, for all the corners of the world. And it is, for many people, the center of the Jewish universe. At the same time, it is beyond dispute that a lot of Jewish communities in the diaspora have shrunk. Some have disappeared completely. Others are tiny remnants of what they used to be. And the most obvious example of that is in the Arab world, the countries near Israel, where there used to be thriving communities in places like Egypt, Lebanon, Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco,
Iraq, where the Babylonian Talmud was completed.
All these places, even as recently as the 1940s. And with the creation of the State of Israel and the war that was declared by seven Arab countries against the fledgling state, most Jews felt pressured, or indeed were pushed out. Happened less universally in Morocco and a little bit later than it did in all the other countries we just referred to. But what's left in these countries is a tiny remnant of what there once was. The same is true in many European countries to a great extent. You know, the Hungarian Jewish community, the Bulgarian Jewish community, the Greek Jewish community. I mean, thank God they're alive and well, but numerically, they're nowhere near as important as they were before the Holocaust. And that's not just because of the creation of the State of Israel, obviously. Not all those Jews rose up and made Aliyah. Many of them were mowed down and killed in the Holocaust. So, yes, I mean, statistically, in many cases, the diaspora is shrinking, if not gone. There are probably very few places in the world, I think, You mentioned off-air Germany and Australia as counterexamples of communities that are growing. Now, the question is, historically, sort of, did Jews and Judaism and Jewish civilization do better in some sense when there was a Jewish state and they were living in Israel? Or did they do better in the diaspora in terms of thriving as a community, creating viable institutions, literature, et cetera, et cetera? And it looks from the clock like we'll have to discuss that next week.
And so we will. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Seventy-five-year-old Jaime is not looking when he crosses the street and gets hit by a car. As he's lying in the road, a priest who sees the accident runs over to help. Just in case it's serious, the priest begins to administer last rites. No thanks, Father, Jaime says as he sits up. I'm not a Catholic. What? You're not Catholic, says a priest. So why did you make the sign of the cross after the car hit you? And Jaime replies, the sign of the cross? No, I was just checking. Checking? Checking for what, says the priest. Everything important. Spectacles, testicles, wallet, and watch. Ah, yes, the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature, Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. Maybe that one's better when you can see it. And now a word of Torah. In a mitzvah that's at the heart of Jewish religious experience, in our portion of Truma this week, God commands the Israelites, Asu li mikdash v'shachanti betocham, make me a sanctuary, and I will dwell among you. With this statement, the book of Exodus moves from practical laws to ritual ones. The plans for the creation of the tabernacle in the wilderness, first site of national worship, and the directions for the building of the Ark of the Covenant are explained here in detail. In order to create a new central shrine for prayer, the place in which God's presence will be, Moses calls on the people of Israel to donate materials from the best of what they have, what comes to be called a truma offering. And a remarkable thing happens. When the people are asked to donate gifts to build the holy structures needed to worship God, they come forward immediately and give much more than is required. Moses actually has to ask the Israelites to stop bringing so much gold and silver and so many precious fabrics. This marks the first and only time in history when a temple building campaign brought in more than was asked for or required. May it happen again sometime soon. In any case, the word for this experience is truma, a freewill offering, a gift to God out of the goodness of the heart. This generous freewill offering is a powerful thing indeed. When it is constructed, the tabernacle in the wilderness, built out of free generosity, immediately will be filled with God's presence. When we give freely of ourselves to our temples today, in time, love, care, or funds, we seek to recreate that freewill offering, the full gift of heart and hand that our ancestors gave in Moses' time. And when we succeed in doing so, we too bring God's presence and love into our lives. The great Israeli poet Yehuda Amichai wrote beautifully and sensuously on the subject of the synagogue in his final book, Open, Closed, Open. I studied love in the sanctuary of my childhood. I sang Come, Sabbath Bride on Friday nights with a bridegroom's fever. I practiced longing for the days of the Messiah. I conducted yearning drills for the days of yore that will not return. The cantor serenades his love out of the depths. Kaddish is recited over lovers who stay together. The male bird dresses up in a blaze of color as we dress the rolled-up Torah scrolls in silken petticoats and gowns of embroidered velvet held up by narrow shoulder straps. We kiss them as they are passed around the synagogue, stroking them as we pass. May we each find the love of God and holiness in our own temples. When we come back on Two Jewish, our guest, Israeli Consul General David Siegel, will explain what makes Israel such an amazing country today. Find out when we return on Two Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114.
There's nothing like a live radio show to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Two Jewish Radio Show, presented by the Jim Click Automotive Team at the Fox on March 2nd.
Better than Prairie Home Companion, it's Deli Home Companion. Join me and my great guests, including legendary comedian Robert Klein, for a live radio variety show March 2nd at the Fox to benefit Jewish Family and Children's Services, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and Temple Emmanuel.
Tickets at the Fox Box Office and FoxTucsonTheater.org.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In what is truly a dog bites man story, Freedom House, an American organization that ranks countries around the globe based on the political rights and civil liberties they grant their citizens, has published its annual report. And it says that Israel is the only state ranked free in the entire Middle East region, and which has upheld democratic principles when tested. By contrast, Turkey's government, a frequent Israel critic that claims to be democratic, was ranked only partly free and is accused of jailing hundreds of journalists, academics, opposition party officials, and military officials in a series of prosecutions aimed at alleged conspiracies against the state. Turkey currently leads the world in the number of journalists behind bars, and democracy advocates are expressing deep concern for the state of press freedom and the rule of law. Among Israel's other neighbors, Lebanon, Israel's northern neighbor, is ranked partly free, but it was criticized for increasing attacks and restrictions on journalists, activists, and refugees. Jordan, another Israeli neighbor, is ranked not free. It was accused of repressing widespread protests against a new electoral law and lack of meaningful political reform. Saudi Arabia and Syria were also ranked in the worst categories when it came to the state of freedom. Iran, the Palestinian Authority, and the Hamas government in Gaza were also ranked not free. Egypt, however, went from not free to partly free due to the successful completion of one democratic election. It should come as no surprise that the only free country in the entire region as ranked by Freedom House is Israel. In other news, with the help of American comedian Sarah Silverman, an Israel-based developer of solar projects and a past guest of Two Jewish, is using online crowdfunding to bring solar energy to the Galapagos Islands. Energia Global has announced the launch of an internet campaign to install 1,200 solar panels on the site of a former garbage dump in the Galapagos UNESCO World Heritage Site, located 550 miles west of the Ecuadorian mainland. The campaign is hosted on the ROI community page of Indiegogo.com. Sarah Silverman publicly declared her support of the initiative, tweeting that the project makes sense and adding prize offerings, including a Skype date with Sarah Silverman. Energia Global President Yosef Abramowitz, a past guest of Two Jewish, said, "I'm used to building large solar fields with equally large traditional investors, but this field is too small for them. Our profits will be donated on your behalf to the Charles Darwin Research Station in the Galapagos." Energia Global aims to raise $250,000 for the first stage of the environmentally friendly mission. Once operational, the 300-kilowatt solar power field on San Cristobal Island will supply clean energy to the Galapagos.
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. And he sang as he stowed that jumbuck in his cargo bag. You'll come I'm a waltzing Matilda with thee.
Down Under, for the first time on record, Australia's national elections have been set for Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement, holiest day of the year. Prime Minister Julia Gillard announced that September 14, 2013 is the date for federal elections in Australia, which disappointed Jewish leaders. My guess is that the Aussies just didn't believe Yom Kippur came so early in 2013 either. Voting is mandatory in Australia. Non-voting is penalized by a fine. Orthodox Jews have always voted by mail or at pre-poll booths because Australian elections are always held on Saturday. Now the majority of Australia's 110,000-strong Jewish community will have to make similar arrangements. Michael Danby, a Jewish lawmaker from the Labour Party, said the Prime Minister called him immediately after she made the announcement. He said he plans to contact the Special Minister of State to discuss some extra arrangements to make it easier for Jews to vote. Joshua Friedenberg, the only Jewish lawmaker for the opposition Liberal Party, said he was disappointed. I think this will be of concern to a number of Jewish Australians. I think we should respect the high holy days of all religions. Rabbi Moshe Gutnick, president of the Organization of Rabbis of Australia, said that although the Prime Minister was remiss in not taking note of Yom Kippur, there will be a welcome increase in pre-polling and observance of Shabbat across the whole Australian community precisely because voting falls on Yom Kippur.
Start spreading the news. I am leaving today. I want to be a part. New York, New York.
And former New York Mayor Ed Koch was laid to rest last week after a funeral on the Upper East Side at Temple Emmanuel. He was eventually buried in a Christian cemetery in Washington Heights. A blunt-spoken, populist mayor who was famous for asking New Yorkers, "How am I doing?" Koch began the renaissance of New York City from its disastrous 1970s. Koch's epitaphs, which he picked himself, make you wonder whether Episcopal mourners visiting their own dead in that cemetery might be a little uncomfortable. "My father is Jewish, my mother is Jewish, I am Jewish," reads the first epitaph on Koch's stone, quoting slain Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. The second epitaph is the Shema. The third, a paragraph that begins, "He was fiercely proud of his Jewish faith." By the way, Daniel Pearl's yard site fell on the day that Ed Koch died. A Polish Jew in an Episcopal graveyard in a largely Dominican neighborhood, Mayor Michael Bloomberg said at the service, what could be more New York or even more Ed Koch? Among others, former President Bill Clinton spoke at Koch's funeral. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World.
Welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning. He's the Consul General of Israel in Los Angeles, David Siegel, where he serves as a senior representative of Israel throughout the southwestern United States, and as we learned earlier, Hawaii. He served as Chief of Staff to Israel's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs in a recent post. He has also served two terms at the Embassy of Israel in Washington, successive roles as Chief of Staff to three of Israel's ambassadors in the United States, and at one point, liaison to the U.S. Congress. He participated in a variety of peace summits and has really extensive experience in Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, where I actually happened to spend a week about a year and a half ago on a program, I don't know the right term, explaining, this kind of hasbara, explaining to American rabbis and Canadian rabbis sort of the position of the foreign ministry on a variety of topics. So I feel like I've been in your home before. Beautiful building, by the way. So how many members of the Israeli Foreign Service are graduates of the University of Vermont exactly?
I think there's only one.
Did you ski when you were there? This is very important.
Well, I came from Israel. I was already in college, so skiing downhill was a bit of a challenge. I tried it a few times, but cross country I did. But the Jewish community in Vermont goes all the way back to the American Revolution, and the Green Mountain Boys. There were Jews among them, and they fought side by side with the first president of the United States. And so there's a very proud history up there, way up there.
It's a great connection to the Northeast. Any listeners from New England, please, write, call, send us money. Tell us a little bit about the challenge that Israel is facing now. For a long time, the focus has been on Iran and preventing Iranian nuclear capability. Now, suddenly, Syria, Lebanon, there's all kinds of, not only the Arab Spring, but the Arab Winter, the next Arab year. It's a very interesting situation, particularly with Syria and Lebanon. Can you talk about that a little bit and what you're at liberty to say?
How much time do you have?
I have a little time.
Well, look, the whole Middle East is a vast region of very deep crisis. This broke out 2 years ago. It's expected to go on for many, many years to come. Anywhere you look, from Israel, north, south, east, you see...
West, fortunately, of the Mediterranean.
West right now is the Mediterranean. Everything's fine. But even the Mediterranean, you know, provides
its own
opportunities
challenges.
And jobs.
Gaza and so on.
But, you know, the countries around Israel are in deep, deep crisis. And beyond that, the whole Middle East, which is over 300 million people, is facing very, very deep difficulties. The ability to innovate, reform, the role of women in life. You know, over 50% of the population in these countries are women. They don't participate in the economy by and large. They're not fully equal. They're not empowered. These societies are there's a vast amount of illiteracy. They're net food importers. Water is becoming more and more of an issue in the Middle East. So you look at the vital statistics of these societies, and there are many, many challenges that they face. And this is just the beginning. So, like you said, Iran has been a major issue for 15 years, and hopefully we'll be able to resolve it peacefully. Israel, more than any other country, has a stake, the highest stake in this. Not to have a military a resolution of this, but to have it done through economic sanctions and diplomatic pressure, and we hope we'll get there. But the timelines are very short. They've accelerated their nuclear program despite the economic pressure and the sanctions. We know all this, and come spring or summer, Iran will be front and center again, because they will have enough highly enriched uranium for a bomb at some point around that time. And what they'll do then is just go underground, take the other components, put it together somewhere. Iran is half the size of Europe. It would be very difficult to know what they're doing. Right now, we can follow it through the United Nations and see how much they're enriching, how much of this material they're creating. And we fear very much that they're very close to that red line. Syria is exploding all around us, as we see in the headlines.
The challenge, I would think, for Israel right now, it has really had almost a laser-like focus on Iran and its foreign ministry work. I'm not saying that's the only thing you guys do, but certainly that's been the key issue front and center now for a number of years. If they're really going to become nuclear capable by 2013, you know, just a few months from now, what options are there at that point for Israel?
Well, we
or is
focus,
that even the right question?
Well, any question is the right question, but our approach has always been to try to do this through peaceful means.
Diplomatically.
And, you know, when getting the world to put this kind of economic pressure on Iran, despite the economic costs at home in all these countries, from Japan to the United States to Western Europe, takes very heavy lifting. And a lot of that has been American leadership, but it's also been Israeli pressure behind the scenes of getting that job done. And we've done a lot on that, and I think we should be very proud of that. But the sad part is that it's not enough, and it has not had the kind of effect that we have wanted to see on the Iranian leadership and their decision-making. So we think a lot more needs to be done, a lot more economic pressure. And the missing component is a real military threat that's put on the table that Iran understands, that convinces them that they will not get to that bomb, that they'll be paying a high price economically, and they still won't get to the bomb. Right now, they believe that they're paying that high price, but eventually, they'll get to the bomb. So the key is that military threat to send them a message that the world is serious, that America is serious, that Israel is serious, that other countries are serious, that they will not get to that bomb. And like you said, the challenges that Israel faces today on all of these fronts is like nothing we've ever seen before.
Most people think that Syria will become another Islamic dictatorship or another Islamic republic, however you want to call it. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think there's some truth in that, but the reality is more complex than that. Syria can go in any number of directions, and no one really knows what tomorrow will bring, because the actors themselves are not united, and they themselves don't know. You could see Syria under some sort of a new regime. You could see Syria continuing to be a failed state for generations to come. You could see Syria break up into enclaves that are sectarian, ethnic enclaves. Imagine the Alawites, Assad, the regime, retreating to the mountains with the chemical weapons, the biological weapons, with the heavy strategic systems, and just remain there as an independent entity. So we're seeing the Middle East really unravel, and the reality that was created 100 years ago by the colonial powers of Europe is now unraveling before our eyes. So we don't know what Syria will be. What we do know is that it will continue to present us with very severe challenges.
So as a professional diplomat, you're in the Foreign Service. It's different than a political appointee of an ambassador. When the government didn't exactly change, but the recent election certainly had a different result than most people expected. Mm-hmm. Netanyahu, the coup, lost 10, 11 seats. What was very recently the largest political party now has 2 seats. Americans don't really understand what happens in Israeli politics. How does that affect you in the foreign ministry?
How does it affect me as a diplomat? Correct. Well, we're all members of the Foreign Service, so we're part of a civil service. It's like the British style of government. We have a few political appointees that could be affected by changes in government, but
so
we...
The ambassador, for example...
Perhaps. And he, by the way, he's a wonderful friend and a great communicator for Israel
absolutely.
And the United States.
Absolutely.
But for us, we're tasked...
And a former guest of Two Jewish, I just have to throw that on.
Good to hear. You have good guests on your
show. Yeah, pretty good.
And we're tasked with representing the state of Israel and a government of Israel. That means the people of Israel. That means the minorities of Israel. That means all the ethnic groups in Israel. Certainly the government as it will be composed, and we'll see, it remains to see what exactly the coalition will be. And that is a privilege. It's a privilege to represent Israel, not just the challenges that Israel faces, but also the opportunities of what Israel is. Israel is becoming a hub of high tech, of medical research. It's a great friend to the United States. It's one of the very few countries that has a very strong economy, a strong military, twice the size of France and Britain, a country that shares deep spiritual and democratic values with the United States. It's a pro-American country. We don't burn American flags. We wave them. How many countries like that do we know of in the Middle East or in the world? So it's a very strong relationship. It's strong economically, it's strong strategically, it's strong in terms of our shared values. And that being said, we still have a lot of work to do, and that's what we're here to do.
I want to thank David Siegel, Consul General of Israel, for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Where should people go to find out more about Israel on the web, besides the news?
Thank you for that plug. You know, my wife always says, don't forget to tell them.
Gotta tell them.
Go to your face. We have a very, very active Facebook operation online, both the consulate and myself personally.
I should note
so please go in. What we try to feature is the news about Israel that people may not focus on, the medical research, the environmental innovations.
The tremendous high-tech growth,
which really is phenomenal. And that is what we try to share, feature online.
I should note that Yair Lapid pretty much ran his campaign on Facebook. So, you know, Israel is very cutting edge. Thank you again, David, for a great visit here on Two Jewish.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back in a moment, we'll hear a final musical play out and find out about next week's guest on Two Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Professor Eric Myers, director of the Center for Jewish Studies at Duke University, a great archaeologist and the excavator of the phenomenal site of Sepphoris in the Galilee. And don't forget to get your tickets soon for the 10th anniversary celebration of Two Jewish at the Fox Theater, Saturday night, March 2nd, with comedian Robert Klein. Our playout this morning comes for the holiday of Purim, coming up February 23rd and 4th, but celebrated for many congregations like my own Temple Emmanuel next Sunday morning, February 17th at 10 a.m., right after Two Jewish. It'll be the fun Purim 2, Now La Yehudim Haita Ora. The Jews had light and joy on their redemption, as told in the Book of Esther. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora. Layhudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, layhudim haita ora, besimcha besasam vikar. Layhudim haita ora,